This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're with Julian Ng, Lin Mark and Sharitz Abdullah. And coming up in about 15 minutes' time is The Breakfast Grill, where Sharitz Abdullah will talk to Dr. Wong Jun Shen, CEO of ISAC Healthcare Limited.
That's right. So Dr. Wong Jun Shen is the CEO of ISAC, and ISAC is a medical eye care service provider based and also listed in Singapore, but they do have clinics here in Malaysia. So I'll be speaking to Dr. Wong Jun Shen on whether their expansion plan in this region is still on the table, as well as, the state of affairs for ophthalmological care in Malaysia.
So catch that on The Breakfast Grill after the 8 a.m. news. And going on to international news, as optimism grows that the U.S. and China are nearing a trade deal, the U.S. is now turning its attention to Japan to renegotiate their trade deals.
Yeah, so both countries are going to kick off their talks in Washington today. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Japan's Economy Minister Toshimitsu Motegi will meet over the course of 2 days. The first round of talks is to decide which areas both countries will discuss, chiefly in the field of goods. Now, this is following the fact that U.S. President Donald Trump has been playing hardball with major U.S. trading partners.
That's right. So the U.S. has about a trade deficit of about $60 billion with Japan. So they're using tariffs and threats in their effort to sort of boost U.S. exports as well as curb Washington's longstanding trade deficit. So this has been one of his election promises. So in May last year, Mr. Trump ordered his administration to investigate the possibility of imposing tariff of about up to 25% on foreign auto and as well as auto parts. So he frequently complained that Japan, they have an unfair advantage in bilateral trade as well as, so he vowed to fix that.
Yeah, that's right. The trade deficit of $60 billion exists between U.S. and Japan. And on the line is Mikio Kumada, global strategist for LGT Capital, helping us to shed some light on this trade negotiation between the U.S. and Japan. Good morning, Mikio. Thanks for joining us. Do you think there is some merit between what Trump is accusing of Japan and trying to open up the Japanese market, because we've seen Trump imposing his will on China and in Europe as well?
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Yes, he does, is the simple question, but the more sophisticated question is that the complaints are self-inflicted because they have pulled out of the TPP, which the previous U.S. government negotiated. So that's why you've seen the U.S. lose out to U.S. exports losing out to other countries, which trade with Japan now on TPP terms. Also, the Europeans now have a trade deal with Japan, so there's more competition. So, yes, they have a point, but it's also largely self-inflicted.
So, Mikio, if we look at the trade negotiations, U.S.-China and U.S.-Europe and now U.S.-Japan, how is this going to modify the trade, world trade, global trade today? We've seen, is it going to make the world a more closed-up place as far as trading goes?
Well, no, I think it's going to make it a more managed place, perhaps, and a more political place. But in terms of trading flows, the way it's going, assuming that the Chinese trade deal, the U.S.-Chinese trade deal, will go through as is widely expected, I don't think it'll be a closed global economy. Remember that we already have two big new trade deals, which is the U.S. The European-Japanese deal and the TPP-11 in Asia Pacific. So there is actually more trade going on in these areas, or at least more barrier-free trade. And I do expect the Japanese and the Americans to eventually agree, because, as I said, the most of the things that the U.S. is looking for have been actually agreed with the TPP with the previous U.S. administration. So it's easy to go back to that at the minimum. There's a little bit of politics involved on how to get there, but it's doable. And also we have the USMCA in North America. So far, we don't have worse trade deals. We just have new ones.
Now, the U.S. and Japan have been longtime allies, both on the trade front as well as on the military front. Now, President Donald Trump has shown an unprecedented willingness to combine negotiations, i.e. to use military bargaining chips to influence the trade negotiations. But how do you think this is going to affect the negotiations between U.S. and Japan, as well as their relations going forward?
Well, I mean, yes, that's correct. But I think in the case of Japan, Japan is maybe in a lucky position. Firstly, because it doesn't matter so much economically as does Europe, for example. So the incentive for the U.S. to, let's say, use the military card to pressure Japan is smaller. Japan today is also much smaller and much weaker than it was in the 1980s, last time the U.S. had trade issues with Japan. The importance and the quality of the relationship between the U.S. and Japan in the military area is also much better than the U.S. Situation, where there is significant, let's say, anti-American sentiment in some countries. So, yes, he could use that, but I would not expect that to go very far in this case.
Mikio, what should investors be most concerned about in this in the trade talk between Japan and the U.S.? Are you able to share with us some numbers?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by numbers. Japan already is a relatively low barrier country in terms of the WTO-defined tariffs. It has one of the lowest in the world. Of course, it is a peculiar market with own customs, so that seems to be more the issue in this case. So the general tariff rate for Japan, for example, as defined by the general average tariff rate, is about 4%, which is among the highest in the world. It's 13% for agricultural products, which is what the U.S. cares about, because with the TPP, it's 9%. So it's cheaper for other countries to trade with Japan than it is for the U.S. But as these things have been agreed, I think it's quite possible that they have agreed with the TPP negotiations a couple of years ago. I think it's a good chance that we will reach an agreement with this as well. In terms of markets, if that's what you mean, I think the big gorilla in the room is still the U.S.-China relationship, not so much the U.S.-Japanese one.
Thanks so much for joining us. And that was Mikio Kumada, Global Strategist with LGT Capital Partners. And on May 1st, that's the date to look out for, because Trump is going to Japan over there, and that he would pay his respect to the new emperor in Japan. And so on a different note in the tech world, Apple and Qualcomm, the chip company, are heading to a court in San Diego today in what could be the biggest corporate lawsuit to date. Apple and four other companies in its supply chain will sue Qualcomm for $27 billion, and Qualcomm has denied wrongdoing and is countersuing Apple for at least $7 billion.
Yes, so there are a couple of questions that the jury would have to consider, namely, does Qualcomm operate a smartphone modern chip monopoly, as well as do they charge too much for licensing fees? Now, the legal struggle between Apple and Qualcomm touches on two crucial issues for the tech industry. What is the proper balance between patent rights and competition, as well as what is the role of government in regulating tech giants?
Yeah, so you know, if we look at this dispute, it began in 2017 after Apple told its manufacturer to stop paying the chip maker on the grounds that the prices were too high. Now, the manufacturers pay Qualcomm royalties as well as they reimburse, and were reimbursed by Apple. And Apple, as well as its suppliers, they've argued that Qualcomm overcharged for their royalty since 2013, and that all these high fees, as well as each phone containing its chip, is, you know, it represents an anti-competitive behavior.
So this is going to be very significant for Qualcomm's licensing business. The licensing generated about 64% of the company's total earnings before tax in 2018. And if Apple wins, other Qualcomm licensees are likely to question their rates they are paying and the future of the business model. Qualcomm's share price has been volatile since 2016 as investors grapple with the uncertainty and declining licensing revenue from Qualcomm. So here you are in a somewhat monopolistic situation, and it's hard to avoid you because any cell phone that you produce would have to come into contact one way or another Qualcomm's patents, and yet very disrupted earnings and revenue streams.
Yes. So, but in this dispute between Apple and Qualcomm, there are pretty high stakes for Apple as well. Now, it may be forced to pay hefty back payments, and the dispute with Qualcomm has left it reliant on Intel, which has yet to release a 5G chip. Now, if Apple's 5G iPhone is delayed beyond its planned release right now, which is set for 2020, it may fall further behind China in particular. Now, a win for Apple in San Diego could make it easier and cheaper to license Qualcomm's technology, as well as have a pro-competitive impact on the industry as a whole. So it would be a boost to Apple if it wants to design its own chips.
Yeah, so you're right about Qualcomm dominating the chip-making industry. The only rival and perhaps the only proprietary technology that's available out there besides Qualcomm is perhaps the Huawei Kirin technology, and that is only being used in Huawei mobile phones. So, you know, what does it mean? The outcome of this case, it will basically affect the smartphone industry for the next years many years to come. So one of the thorniest topics is that whether Qualcomm royalty rates will hurt consumers by raising the smartphone prices. So at the heart of this conflict, there's one question: how much is Qualcomm technology going to be worth?
Yeah, I think this is rich coming for Apple, who charge a low-wage person's annual salary or monthly salary for their iPhones. Maybe this is the reason for it, Qualcomm being too expensive with their patents. And also, I think it's a catch-22 for the US because they cannot accept Huawei, whereas the rest of the world is warming up to Huawei. All right, we'll be coming back with local news after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.